You're listening to local and regional news produced by KMUN with help from our news partners. I'm Katie Frankowitz, and I'll soon be joined by KMUN news host and producer Skylar Butenshin. It's Friday, August 8th. The Clatsop County Animal Shelter is at capacity after dogs and cats seized in an animal abuse and neglect case arrived at the shelter this week. Typically, there are 40 to 45 animals at the shelter and in foster care situations in the community. Now, as of Thursday morning, that number has more than doubled, and the shelter is not able to take in any more animals at this time. Lily Tollefson is the executive director of Clatsop Animal Assistance. The nonprofit works within the shelter, coordinating the volunteers who walk dogs and helping to fund medical care for the animals there, among other things.
And after our most recent board meeting, several of our board members have been, they're our founding members of the organization, and they can remember three cases of this magnitude in the last 25 years. So it's significant. And it's essentially the influx of intake in a very short amount of time with very little notice. That's kind of what is just makes it so urgent.
On Thursday, the nonprofit put out a community call asking for donations to help with the purchase of additional food and veterinary care, and for new volunteers and foster families. Tollefson has reached out to other shelters to see if they are able to take on animals from Clatsop. One thing that makes this influx of pets extra complicated is that the legal case concerning them is still pending. That means the Clatsop County Animal Shelter could be housing them for a while. I'm Katie Frankowitz reporting.
Clatsop County resident Frank Mansfield has announced he will be running for the Republican Party nomination to represent Oregon Senate District 16. Mansfield now joins Clatsop County Commissioner Courtney Bangs in seeking the nomination. Senate District 16 encompasses Clatsop, Columbia, and Tillamook counties, as well as portions of Multnomah, Washington, and Yamhill counties. Currently representing the district is Tillamook Republican Senator Suzanne Weber. She was barred from running for re-election in 2026 for her participation in the 2023 Republican walkout. Mansfield holds a doctorate in aerospace engineering. He spent over 30 years working for the Department of Defense and served in the Air Force and Navy Reserves. Mansfield says he's running to fight waste and misuse of funds in the state government, and he says he believes Oregon Governor Tina Kotek has mishandled the state's homelessness crisis. In managing Oregon's forests, Mansfield says the role of government should be aimed at stewardship, not preservation. This story comes to us through a news partnership with The Astorian. Read more online at dailyastorian.com. At a recent Port of Tillamook Bay Board of Directors meeting, Rockaway Beach City leaders requested exclusive use of the port's train tracks through the north part of town in order to facilitate building a segment of the Salmonberry Trail. As envisioned, the Salmonberry Trail will run 82 miles from Banks to the Oregon coast via the port's disused railroad line. Rockaway Beach City Manager Luke Shepard said that the city had looked at the possibility of a rails with trails configuration, but found that the cost was too high. Representatives from the Oregon Coast Scenic Railroad argued that it was possible to combine their continued operations with an adjacent trail. Tillamook County Commissioner Aaron Scar said that the project was now at a critical decision point. This story comes to us through a news partnership with the Tillamook Headlight Herald, online at tillamookheadlightherald.com. An estimated 170,000 Washington state residents stand to lose food stamp benefits under President Trump's recent tax cut law. Right now, food banks across the Northwest are already facing high demand and difficult choices about how much they can stay open and what food they can hand out. Many are also burning through reserves they built up during the height of the COVID era. This comes as inflation and other factors have kept grocery prices high, worsening food insecurity for many. Since Trump returned to office in January, his administration has cut hundreds of millions of dollars worth of shipments to food banks, as well as funding for them to buy produce, meat, dairy, and other food products from local farmers. Aaron Chizeski with the Seattle-based organization Food Lifeline says state lawmakers will need to appropriate more money for food banks to ensure they keep enough food on the shelves for the coming needs. The White House says the GOP overhaul, quote, promotes work, responsibility, and restores SNAP to serve the truly needy, end quote. This story comes to us through a news partnership with the Chinook Observer, online at chinookobserver.com. For millennia, indigenous peoples have intentionally set fires to care for the land. Colonization and policy largely put an end to those practices, though the tradition endured. As Murphy Woodhouse reports, a new law in California has opened the door to restore cultural burning, a potential model for the rest of the West.
On a late June afternoon in the remote Northern California town of Orleans, Michael Sanchez hops into a wildland fire truck. He's the prescribed fire and fuel specialist for the Kadug tribe and helps organize their cultural burns, including those in his neighborhood that day.
And yeah, one of the burns is my house, so I've been kind of taking the main lead on preparing that.
You got some interest in that burn?
I do, yeah. Uh-huh.
While small, they represent a major step forward in the tribe's long-standing effort to promote cultural burning. It's the fruit of years of advocacy and collaboration with federal agencies and nonprofits to bring down barriers to putting good fire on the ground. In 2022, the state established a claims fund for when fires set by landowners and tribes cause damage, reducing financial risk for burners and the public. Then last fall, Senate Bill 310 was unanimously approved. It allows tribes to enter into agreements with the state and bypass regulatory requirements to burn. Kadug leaders called it a chance to atone for efforts to stamp out burning well into the 20th century. Sanchez says 310 has made burning much simpler. We pass an orange sign notifying drivers of the cultural burn.
That's one of the requirements, and then also a 72-hour notification to local agencies, Forest Service.
There are a few other steps, like written permission from landowners, but that's about it.
Yep, so yeah, this is my place here.
The first burn of the day is in an adjoining yard. Using lighters, a Kadug trio sets the dry grass and leaves ablaze, checking it with a simple hose. Bill Tripp, the tribe's natural resources director, says the fires help protect homes.
Well, today we're just trying to get rid of this stuff that's going to catch an ember and start a spot fire in the summer.
Bill was taught to burn as a young boy by his great-grandmother, bearer of a time immemorial tradition of using fire for ceremonies and the care of key animal and plant species, like hazel used for basketry. Tripp is the only tribal council-recognized practitioner able to oversee burns, but his people created a process us to train more. He and others see these small projects as a way to rebuild skills and a sense of setting fires as common practice.
I would like to see 10 houses just get together, have a barbecue, and get it all burnt in a 2-3 day window.
In 2023, a major federal commission said that beneficial fire, which includes cultural and prescribed burning, is essential to restoring ecosystem health and reducing wildfire risk.
We don't need to reinvent the wheel here.
Dylan Cruz is the president of Sustainable Northwest. Inspired by reforms in California, the nonprofit helped push for a claims fund in Washington and Oregon. While rare, intentional burns can escape control and cause significant harm.
We want to do more cultural burning, but the biggest limiting factor or concern is around liability issues.
He encourages other Western states to work with tribal nations to remove barriers to cultural burning. In a grass field on the outskirts of Orleans, a small team is burning a strip of black around the edge.
Once we get a black line around it, then we can let it rip.
That's Bill's brother, Jacob Tripp. Trailing behind the slow-marching flames, a group of teenagers, seasonal workers for the Natural Resources Department, sprays the edges with bladder bags. Think water guns attached to water-filled backpacks. It's Kadug Youth Council Secretary Chloe King's first burn.
Like, there's a lot of adrenaline going through me right now, but I definitely feel like I'm doing the best thing for the land right now.
Black line complete, the burners light strips through the interior. Unsatisfied with the speed of progress, Jacob pulls out a propane torch. When he gets back to the first turn of the black line, the flames intensify and then tear through the remaining dry grass. Boxed in by black, the flames quickly diminish.
This is awesome. That was crazy.
Chloe has caught the fire bug. Here's Bill.
A really important part of our Kadug educational process is to make sure that we're putting fire in the hands of our children at a young age and teaching them how to be responsible with it.
Just like his great-grandmother did with him. For the Mountain West News Bureau, I'm Murphy Woodhouse.
You're listening to news from KMUN. To hear us on the air and catch national news from NPR, tune in to 91.9 FM. Morning news begins at 7:59 every weekday. That's all from us for this week. Stay safe out there. We'll see you Monday.